Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing fine.
Good time for another poem. This week, we move to the heart. We're going to talk about infective endocarditis. This is a condition that's been recognized as a distinct entity for almost 100 years now, yet lots of debate persists as to the optimal definition of what the disease is, how to treat it, and we're going to look today at how to prevent it. An estimated 15,000 new cases of infective endocarditis diagnosed in the U.S. each year. The exact incidence of this is difficult to determine because the definitions vary from decade to decade, place to place, and author to author. Sex and age have an impact on incidence of infectious endocarditis. Men predominate in most studies. Endocarditis has been increasingly becoming a disease of the elderly. More than half of all infective endocarditis cases in the U.S. and in Europe, by the way, now occur in patients over the age of 60. This was not the case 25 years ago, probably due to the numbers and types of susceptible hosts rather than to a shift in the virulence of the infective organisms. This week, Mark, you're going to help us answer the question, who should receive prophylaxis against infective endocarditis? Mark, what did the authors of this study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology find?
Well, this is an update of the 2006 guidelines from the same group, and it's much overdue, and I think these new guidelines are really one of the more significant changes and probably an overdue departure from decades of overly complex decision-making and, frankly, over-treatment of these patients. And the major change is that we're going to be recommending treatment only for those patients who are at the highest risk of adverse outcomes from endocarditis, not simply everyone who has a slightly higher lifetime risk of developing endocarditis. So key differences are that the Task force said you don't have to do endocarditis prophylaxis for most patients and most dental procedures. Only the following groups should get prophylaxis: patients with a prosthetic cardiac valve or prosthetic material used for valve repair, those with previous endocarditis, those with congenital heart disease, and transplant patients with valve regurgitation. So pretty high risk, narrow indication. So these patients only need prophylaxis if the dental procedure involves manipulation of the gingival tissue or the periapical region of the teeth or perforation of the oral mucosa. People who do not require prophylaxis include the following: anybody who's undergone valve repair but didn't have any prosthetic material in place, people with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy with obstruction, patients with mitral valve prolapse, patients with just getting a routine injection or radiographs, and anybody who presents with bleeding from trauma to the lips or oral mucosa, they don't need prophylaxis.
Wow, that's a huge group of patients that we were prophylaxing that don't need it anymore.
Absolutely. Yep. And prophylaxis is not recommended for non-dental procedures like transesophageal echo or for GI or GU procedures. If it is recommended, if prophylaxis is indicated, they recommend single dose for dental procedures of amoxicillin or Keflex or clindamycin, azithromycin or clarithromycin. The dose is 2 grams of amox or 50 milligrams per kilogram for kids, and for clarithromycin, 500 milligrams or 15 milligrams per kilogram in children. So simple regimens as well.
Now, I don't know what your experience is, but I had a funny story here in California last week. I got a call from a dentist. One of my patients was in his dental chair, and he heard a murmur and wanted to know, called me up and asked me if I thought the patient should be prophylaxed. Again, I won't go into the medical details, but both according to the new criteria and the old criteria, the patient wouldn't have met prophylaxis requirements. But I couldn't figure out a delicate way to ask him why he was listening to the patient's heart. The patient came for a dental exam.
Maybe it was a really loud murmur, one of those grade 4 or 5 off the chest kind of murmurs.
Perhaps.
Yeah, but you know, it is going to be a challenge to get not only physicians and dentists, but patients to accept this because, you know, I know people who have a little mitral valve prolapse that's intermittent,
exactly.
And they have a normal echo, but they're convinced that they have this, you know, dread heart disease, and if they don't take their antibiotic, they're just going to drop dead in the dental chair. And so convincing people that we're not just doing this to save money, which we are. I mean, frankly, I'm sure that's part of the intent, which is good, is to not waste resources, but to convince people that it is just as safe and maybe more safe given the complications of antibiotics is going to be tough.
Right. Well, there are two tough parts of this. Both involve education. The first is to educate the doctors and the dentists about what the new guidelines are. And, you know, as you and I have talked about lots of times in the past, that sort of dissemination to the medical community is very difficult.
Well, yes, what drug company is going to pay to tell us to not use as much clarithromycin?
Exactly.
You know, it's maybe some good-hearted folks out there will do that, but it's tough. That's just classic in terms of dissemination. It's always harder to convince people to do less than to do more, I think.
Right.
And I would encourage physicians, you know, one thing you can do, just when you're at the hospital, run by, get the August 19th issue of Journal of the American College of Cardiology. Most hospital libraries get it. And just pull that article, make a copy, and take it home and keep that around. Keep it in your desk drawer. And, you know, that way you can refer to that when, and you can bring it in, haul it into the room with the patient, say, here's the latest guideline, see. Maybe that can be part of the education.
Excellent suggestion. Nice talking with you, Mark. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.